powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Well, we've got about a week left in May, and during that time, the Mariners have a really, really cool opportunity. In fact, an opportunity that they need to seize, Jake, because right now people are not that happy. This is a team that was supposed to be pushing for the playoffs, and here they are playing a team that had a fire sale, is in rebuild mode, and has roughly the same record. You need this series. So why not start it off with a win? That's exactly what the Mariners did yesterday. Fantastic showing. Three separate players hit for home runs for Seattle, including Julio Rodriguez right here.
Pitch to Julio. Swing on. High drive. Right field. Got big time carry. Giddy up. Go.
Cal Raleigh gets in on the action, too.
Here's the pitch on the way. Swinging a well-hit ball deep down the left field line. Stay fair. Goodbye, baseball. Cal Raleigh with his fourth home run of the season. Oh, my goodness. He has five hits and four have left the ballpark.
Now, the Mariners had a close call there when the A's got three runs in the sixth, but ultimately finished with a 7-6 win. And it was much needed to stop a skid.
It was. And then you had that three-run... You had that, the two-run shot by Eugenio Suarez, too, which was absolutely a blast. Those three home runs were the difference in this game for the Mariners, and it was great to be able to see them win. Now, it was a lot closer than I wanted it to be, 7-6 going all the way down to the wire in the ninth. Paul Sewald comes in and shuts it down like he always does, but, if you're talking about a team that has been struggling, a team that has really wanting to get themselves on the right track, they have to be able to use this series against the A's to be able to do that, at least to be able to springboard themselves forward and get them going in a positive direction. And Stacy, yesterday we took some time. It was therapeutic to express our frustration, express our anger.
I think we needed to get some frustration out there.
Yeah, and it well deserved. And it doesn't mean that all of that has gone away, but you certainly see the opportunity that the Mariners have, or that they have to take advantage if they do want to give themselves an actual chance of being able to have a summer to remember. And to me, this week, this can't be understated how important it is to get themselves going in the right direction and start chipping away at how many games they are back and getting themselves back to a 500 record again as they go into Memorial Day more importantly, around Stacy's birthday.
Yeah, it's not around. My birthday is May 31st. It's Tuesday. Don't worry, I'll remind you guys.
Okay, yeah. So
yeah, we know.
If they're not going in the right direction by Stacy's birthday, then that will be a problem. So this to me is a look, seven runs, getting a win, just get the win, get no matter how it came. even though it was really frustrating to watch Marco Gonzalez there at the end nearly give this game back. I mean, at that point, I mean, let's just be honest, Stacy, Curtis, at that point when Marco gave up those five earned runs, did you think that, hey, this is going to happen again?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
Because I did. I threw up my hands. I walked around and I said, you've got to be kidding me. Not again. Not to the A's. And I was there.
Scott
all the
Service
way to the
talked
end.
Talked about it being a nail biter.
I guess that's more what we're used to. Nail biter right to the end. nice to get the homestand started off on the right foot tonight. Did some really good things offensively. Obviously, Julio driving a train with a big home run early. Cal Raleigh, really nice game tonight. A couple hits that are right-handed with a big homer. And then Gino keeps hitting him over the fence.
Speaking of Julio, by the way, this from Alex Mayer, who gets a bunch of really cool stats together for the Mariners. Julio Rodriguez leads MLB rookies in WRC plus hits, batting average, and Fangraphs WAR over his last 30 games.
Now, this is something that is exciting, right? When you talk about no matter what is going on, you can find solace in something or find a silver lining. Well, this is more than a silver lining. Julio Rodriguez has been sensational since the end of April. And he has been lights out in terms of his development, how rapidly he is just gaining confidence, you know, being a true, pure, all-around hitter, being able to, you know, ground balls in the gap, hitting, you know, doubles, hitting, you know, home runs, and starting to pick up that pace over the last week. It's just exciting to see him truly be confident in who he is and in his approach, which has allowed him to be able to have that success, Stacey.
I think that it's really, really good to see, obviously. You want to be able to see the rest of the offense catch up. You saw that with Eugenio Suarez, Cal Raleigh. We talked about them getting involved. Either way, though, this is a team. Would you guys be satisfied with anything less than a sweep? I think you need a series win. If they don't sweep, I'm not going to be like, wow, what an embarrassment. The A's have talent. They're a bad team, but they have talent.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think, again, what is it, the 24th? In 7 days, you've got a chance to really turn this thing around. If you take this series over the A's, most especially if you sweep, and then you have a really competitive series against Houston. You have a chance by June 1st to flip a conversation. We had almost a four-hour show yesterday talking about how frustrating it is to see this team head into an offseason knowing what they had to do for myriad reasons not be able to do it, and then enter into a year in which they're supposed to reach the playoffs with a pretty disappointing record
right
at the end of May. You have a chance to turn this around in very little time.
Yeah, well, they have to take, they have to capitalize on the schedule that they have in front of them. And I know we joked about your birthday because it is going to be your birthday on the 31st.
Like, once again, May 31st, that's a Tuesday.
But honestly, I'm going to be looking at the June 5th spot. Where are they at on June 5th? As they go through Oakland right now in this three-game series. They've got Houston, which is always tough and always gives them a hard time. Then you have Baltimore, who is really a team that you have no idea what type of team that you're going to get against them, but win certainly more than winnable games. Then you have Texas at that point. So those are three out of the four series that you should, you know, roster-wise, going into that series that you should win. So if they can take advantage of those, if they can win, you know, the next three out of four series, I will feel a little bit better, a little more optimistic. But again, those are teams that are below 500. That doesn't necessarily give you a perfect depiction of can they compete against, you know, good playoff teams. You know, when they play Houston, Boston, Minnesota, the Angels. So far,
the answer to that has been no.
Yes.
With the exception of having a great game against the Mets, who were one of the better teams in the National League, you've struggled against AL contenders and teams that are expected to be contenders. The Blue Jays are one of those teams. Boston isn't even one of those teams. Like, they're struggling in their own division, and yet you really struggled against them. Like, so far, you have not looked like a playoff team.
Right, and that's why, at minimum, they have to win three out of the four series to just get themselves on track, to put themselves in the right position. Outside of that, they need to show that they can legitimately and consistently compete against good quality opponents, against teams that are above 500, and that will be the next challenge that they will have to face as they get more into June. But right now, by June 5th, three out of the four, that's got to be the goal for them. And right now with Oakland, they've got to be able to take advantage of this opportunity that they have with the A's, that they should win. They should take advantage of this series.
The way I look at it is, like, there's going to be slumps throughout the season. They could go on a 8-game win streak and have an 8-game losing streak sometime in August still. Like, it's just mm-hmm. the nature of baseball. But the most important thing is to stop the bleeding whenever you can. Like, remember that series last year against the Yankees, and it looked absolutely abysmal, horrible, and then you had Logan Gilbert at his start, and he just mowed him down and looked amazing, and you were like, man, they needed to stop the bleeding. It was so important just to get that one win. Like, you need those wins to kind of prop you up and boost you for, you know, some good performances, because you're going to have more bad performances. We talked with Ryan Divish, who said it as this isn't when you figure out whether you're getting to the playoffs this time of the year, but you can bury yourself.
He said it's too late to be saying it's too early.
No, he said that, but we had a separate interview with him where he talked about basically, like,
You're talking about Gary Hill. Gary Hill said the one thing that you can learn in this time period is what maybe not whether you're in or you're out, but whether you've completely buried yourself and put yourself out of contention entirely if you get yourself into too big of a hole.
And that's what the Mariners can avoid. That's what they can start to do. So with a series win over the A's, and I mean, fingers crossed with a series win over Houston, it's going to be tough, but you've done it once at home.
Mm-hmm.
You can start to dig out of a hole enough to buy yourself some more wiggle room to kind of hover around 500.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, hover around 500. Just stay there for right now if you can do it.
Yeah, if they can. And honestly, you're hoping that the Angels come back down to earth a little bit. And Taylor Ward isn't continuing to hit 370 for the Angels, and things start to simmer down for them as the season progresses, and you just got to keep yourself in striking distance, striking range. But the Mariners have a lot of work to do. I mean, 10 games back, they've got a lot of work to do to be able to do that. And certainly the next three out of the four series, they're going to have the opportunity to do it. But these next two games against the A's, Stacey, you mentioned, you know, hey, do you look at the sweep as you know, completely necessary? No, it's not completely necessary, but I think for the overall momentum and the momentum swing that this team needs in that clubhouse and the good vibes that this team needs, I really do think that taking these next two games over the next 2 days would be critical for them to be able to set themselves up against the Houston Astros. I do think that would be a great positive momentum builder to be able to say, you know what, hey, take a deep breath, relax, we're good, we're fine, we're settling in, and knowing that, you know, they've got the opportunity to turn this thing around.
Can we just talk big picture too, being able to step back and look at it and say, hey, if you're telling me, you know, there is a chance that you're going to really struggle this year, then you at least want to feel like the arrow is pointing up. Well, your starter today, George Kirby, like a good performance from him, and you can feel more assured, like, okay, that arrow is pointing up.
Yeah.
At the very least. Like, you have two clubs with similar records when they shouldn't have them, but you're going to feel a little better knowing that, like, one team is on an upward trajectory.
Yeah.
A good start by Kirby does make you feel that way.
No, it does, especially, you know, with Kirby. I mean, he's been fine, but it certainly wasn't anywhere close. The last two starts haven't been anywhere close to that unbelievable outing that he had against the Tampa Bay Rays in his first start. And so you would like to be able to see George Kirby have some success, to be able to get a little bit deeper into the game, maybe the fifth inning, and do it on a positive note, right? I mean, he was able to do that against the in his last start, but it didn't end positively, right? The whole debacle between him and Sergio Romo, and who's coming in, who's coming out, all that, and he gives up a double. I would just like to see a good, clean outing for George Kirby, because the last two have definitely been a learning experience, and he's going through that learning curve right now as a young rookie, you know, getting his first big league action. So this would be a good opportunity for him to really be able to flex his stuff and to be able to, you know, have a positive outing and be able to build upon that. Because you're right. In the long term, throughout the course of the season, you're going to need George Kirby to step up. You're going to need him to be a solid contributor within that rotation.
All right. As a reminder, you guys, it is Tuesday. That means we have the Dugout from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. All Mariners. It starts with the Scott Service Show at 1 p.m. We're also going to bring on Rick Riz and Brandon Gustafson talking baseball from 1 to 2. We'll have it sprinkled in to the show, obviously, leading up to that. But it is All Mariners from 1 to 2 for the Dugout. That's every single Tuesday. NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal going to join us in about 45 minutes. We're going to take a look around the rest of the league and obviously here in Seattle. Right now, though, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, guys, Kyle Lewis is on his way to Seattle.
Here we go.
Dot, dot, dot.
Let's go, baby.
To meet with team trainers to determine if he's ready to be activated. What's the real headline?
The Mariners need good news in the worst way. Can I tell you my other headline? Do you think it's okay to read?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. It's okay to read.
This is like when my mom told me our dad would be coming back to get his keys. Jake, do you have anything to say about Kyle Lewis?
Oh, about Kyle Lewis? Not that headline?
What am I supposed to say to that?
It sounds on its face like it's going to be great news. Welcome back, Dad. And then, you know,
No,
just here to grab my keys.
Oh, it's terrible. Is this normal protocol? Is this normal protocol? Because I haven't heard this.
I think it sounded far more optimistic.
I think if the Mariners weren't in the position they are in right now, where they, like the headline says, they need good news in the worst way.
Yeah.
They would not be exhausting every single possible option to get Kyle Lewis back on the field. I think that if the Mariners were winning right now, they would be putting him on a much more smoother path to the bigs.
Right. But it also makes me skeptical and nervous that if this is not the normal protocol when they call somebody up, does the team doctor always check the players that are coming up from the minors to clear them? Like, I'm just curious if this is normal protocol or not, because I don't want to, overanalyze this, but it makes me a little nervous if it's out of the norm, that, hey, we'll see if we can clear you to get you out on the field and to be able to get you in that DH role, get you in part of this lineup. I hope that Kyle Lewis is truly healthy and that they're not, he's not exposing himself or the team's not exposing him to potentially being hurt, right out of the gate. And I think that is always something that you worry about. And even with their plans at DH, look at Mitch Haniger. He didn't get hit. Mm-hmm. He didn't get hurt out on the field. He didn't get hurt running the bases. He got hurt in the batter's box. And injury-prone players find a way to get injured with bad luck, unfortunately, no matter what situation you put them in. So every time Kyle Lewis is out there, and if he does get out there, you're crossing your fingers every time that he gets through, his at-bat, run the bases, everything, healthy and okay. Because, as you said, they need him in the worst way.
Now, take this with a grain of salt, but speaking of, Scott Servais, per Daniel Kramer of MLB.com, says he's hopeful Lewis will be all systems go for today.
Okay.
But,
all
again,
right.
Yet to be
I'm hopeful as well. I'm hopeful that we get to see Kyle Lewis. I mean, wouldn't that be a great sight to see after, all the stuff that he has been through? And, gosh, I hope that it is the contributions that we're all hoping it could be, because we all know how insanely talented Kyle Lewis is, but... And it's a tough ask for him to come back up to the big league level and come hit right away. But I guess you've got a soft landing with the Oakland A's.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Rashad Penny sat out Monday's OTA with a hamstring injury. What's the real headline?
Injury-prone player sits out with injury. But this time, I don't think it's that concerning. That's the real headline. Real headline. Raise your hand if you're surprised Rashad Penny is not participating in practice. What? No hands? Okay, that makes sense. But secondly, it's May.
True. It is May. But it is also, Stacey, a reminder that this could go sideways at any moment. Right now, you don't know the health of Chris Carson. Right now, Rashad Penny is sitting out with a hamstring injury. And even if it's minor and even if it's precautionary and all that, it's just a reminder that it could go away in a flash. And remember last year, Chris Carson, Rashad Penny, they looked amazing in OTAs. You remember that? They looked amazing at the start of training camp. And then Rashad Penny gets hurt. And he misses a significant chunk of time to start the season because of the injuries that he was dealing with. So that's why I look at this draft pick of Ken Walker of not only being a smart one and an exciting one, but it was a necessary one. Because you have to hedge against the injury issues that have plagued your running back group for, over the last four or five seasons. And I think that it is the smart move that they have Ken Walker. And one of the reasons why, Stacey, I mentioned him is four Seahawk rookies that I genuinely believe have a great shot at starting from day one.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, Russell Wilson asked yesterday at Denver's OTA his thoughts about starting the season, returning to Seattle as a member of the Broncos. Here's what he had to say.
I think it's going to be an exciting time. Obviously, Seattle's meant the world to me over the past 10 years. It's a special place. It's a special place to play Lumen Field. I have high regard for all those guys over there and what they do. I think for me, it's non-emotional, though. It's got to be non-emotional. You got to be able to go into it. With understanding that it's just ball.
Doesn't want to get caught up in the emotions of his return in week one. What is the real headline?
As if we needed more confirmation that Russell Wilson is a robot.
Does he feel feelings?
I have no emotions in week one.
I don't know. That's the hard part. There's a part of you that sits there and goes, maybe you should let your emotions ride in week one, right? Like, use those to your advantage and you know, whatever emotion you have or the chip on your shoulder about the situation, whatever it is, use that in week one. But also, this is going to be highly, highly emotional.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it's going to be nuts.
Different approaches, right? Like, obviously, I'm teasing about the Wilson being a robot thing because he is very robotic in his press conferences. But I'm not surprised that he wants to detach any emotion from his return. There are some players that relish that, and it's like your revenge game moment. And then there are other players that, you know, they'll go back to face old teammates. Like, there have been many times I've been reading about a Seahawks player where it's like they go back to meet old teammates for a game, and it's like they just don't even talk to them the week of, or they don't say anything. Because it's like, you know, you might talk after the game, you'll catch up, but before then, you don't want anything on your mind.
Right. I think it's hard. I mean, honestly, I don't know how you keep your emotions in check, and I don't know if Russell will really truly be able to do that or not. And obviously, from his practices,
I don't believe Russell Wilson at all. Russell Wilson wants to come in and absolutely dominate and make Pete and John feel like they made a huge mistake.
Sure.
I do not believe that there are no emotions.
There's no question. There's no question. But but in the moment, the intention before the game or the attitude or the mindset, I think, is different. But in the moment, can you detach yourself from those emotions? And can, you know, as we've known Russell for 10 years, talk about neutral mindset, having the late, great Trevor Moad, you know, rest in peace, come on our show and talk about what that means. I mean, you know, can he tap into that? I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be incredibly difficult to not feel the emotions and the energy that's going to be at Lumen Field week one, because that place is going to be absolutely buzzing on Monday Night Football. It's going to be insane.
Still going to be very surreal seeing it.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be so weird. Honestly,
like,
so
weird. I'm not silly enough to say Russell Wilson isn't talented. The Seahawks won't miss him. Like, I'm not stupid. But I'm just saying, I just think that's a stupid opinion. But I also... I'm eager to see what this team looks like without him. Maybe not this year when they're still rebuilding. But again, it's just a phase of this team that I've personally never covered. I'm very interested to see where they go.
Yeah, it's a whole new era.
But I wasn't necessarily expecting to see those two thoughts come to a head in week one. Like those two conflicting feelings I was not expecting to see quite literally play out on the field in front of me in just a couple months here.
The NFL, they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. I mean, what? There might be like, what, 4 or 5 tickets left? Still available, and they're probably like $600 in the 300 level.
Absurd.
I mean, it's just absolutely absurd.
It's Jake and Stace. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Speaking of Rashad Penny not practicing, are we freaking out? I'm going to have a temperature check for a couple big news items to come from the first day of OTAs. That's next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, the Seahawks opened OTAs yesterday. They'll continue their 3-day OTA series with practice today and tomorrow. We'll be hearing from Pete Carroll, I'm sure, on at least one of those days, if not both. If it's one day, I would guess we hear from him on Wednesday. The Mariners pitchers have a disturbing trend. We'll get to that in 15 minutes. So if you're waiting for more Mariner stuff, don't worry. I do want to talk about OTAs because there are a couple news items, Jake, that I think people are panicking about. So we want to figure out to panic or not to panic.
Panic?
Okay? Are you freaking out or not? So here we go. First one.
I'm freaking out, man.
Rashad Penny did not practice because he's resting a hamstring issue. Pete Carroll said that he took part in some workouts, has been running, but did not take part in team drills.
Are you panicking?
No.
Why? Why are you not panicking?
Because it's May. Why are you panicking?
It's May 24th.
It's May. Jake, it's May. I think that, look, here's the reality of the situation. I'm not panicking because I don't expect Rashad Penny to be healthy for a full season.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not panicking because the Seahawks, probably also expecting that, went out and drafted a running back in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Brock Heward and people whose football opinions I trust are very high on said running back. So I'm kind of eager to see him. I'm also not panicking because Pete Carroll made it clear that Rashad Penny was doing other drills. He was running. He was doing all this stuff. He just didn't want to take part in team drills where you can't control tempo.
Yep. And that is why I think that you have to take all that in and say, look, this is a non-story. Total non-story.
Are you panicking?
I have panic that sets in when I hear these things. Why? Yes, Stacey, it is May 24th. Yes, Stacey, it is just holding himself out. Your OTAs, non-controllable drill, don't want anything silly to happen. But it is a reminder that Rashad Penny and his health is very questionable. And when you're talking about this team and the success of this team throughout the season, Ken Walker or not, is dependent on this running game.
Yes.
And you need this running game to not just be average or good. You need it to be great. Mm-hmm. And you need Rashad Penny. And you need to have Ken Walker. And it would be great to be able to add Chris Carson in the mix, that we have no idea what his health status is right now. Still at May 24th, well, they have no prognosis to be able to share with everyone. So that at this point right now, I am not fully panicked, but it makes me uneasy because it just is a reminder that if things go sideways during the season at the running back position, Stacey, this thing is dead in the water. It's just true. It's dead in the water. This offense needs to have a solid running game and to be able to have a consistent running game with your running backs. And to ask Ken Walker at one point, and again, this is just talking openly, talking honestly, is that if Rashad Penny was unfortunately hurt to start the season and all the workload goes to Ken Walker, that's a lot to ask a rookie for a 17-game season. Right. And you do not want to be in a position for that. So it's smart that they're holding Rashad Penny out during these team drills. It's the right move. And ultimately, in regards to right here, right now, it is a non-story, total non-story. But it does bring panic to me when I think about
the context
of what has to happen for this season to be a success.
Let me get to the next story then, because it's related.
I'm freaking out, man.
So we're maybe not freaking out for the first one, but are we freaking out that there's no update yet on Chris Carson, who was not at OTAs? Pete Carroll, per Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times, said Carson's in town and the team may know more on his situation later this week.
Okay. All right. I would say that I am panicking, because this to me does not sound optimistic. And even if they say, hey, he's cleared. He's cleared. He's going to practice. He's going to be a part of the offseason. It's the same thing with, you know, my feeling of anxiety when it comes to Rashad Penny, Stacey, is that Chris Carson doesn't play the game in a soft manner. This isn't a scat back that runs out of bounds. This is a bruising running back that only knows how to run physically, right? And that's what you love about Chris Carson. That's what makes him so special. But you do you're going to be concerned if he can legitimately stay healthy throughout the season, because this is a legit injury that you are worried about. Mm-hmm. And so I am panicked a little bit, no matter what the outcome is when it comes to Chris Carson's status of health.
All right. So panicking on Carson, not panicking on Penny. How about this one?
I'm freaking out, man.
Three starters in the secondary, Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, and Trey Brown, were not available for OTAs.
Okay. This is hard, because panic to me is like, this is a huge story. We should all be freaking out about this right now. To me, it's not panic, it's concern. I am concerned about this, legitimately. And Stacey, you could say, well, Quandre Diggs, Jamal Adams, they're veterans. They're guys that they're going to come in and do their job and do it well. And I have full trust that talent-wise, they'll be able to come out on the field and make an impact. I do. But when you have a new defensive scheme, you need to be out on the field and you need to play together and you need to develop that chemistry. I'm sorry, you don't get the benefit of the doubt of saying, hey, these are veteran guys. They know what they're doing. They'll be able to pick this stuff up. No, you have to go and do it. You can't replace being out on the field and practicing with each other and communicating, or else the Legion of Boom would have just said, hey, we got this. Cover three match. No big deal. We don't have to worry. We don't have to practice. The difference is that Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs are hurt, right? And Trey Brown is nursing an injury. So there's not really there's not really a decision to be had here. It's not like these players are just sitting out to sit out because it's voluntary and it's OTAs. They're recovering from injury. But the reason why this is concerning is because this is valuable time to continue to keep, you know, building chemistry and making positive steps to owning the defensive scheme and the defensive transition and helping everyone else be on the same page. So when you talk about starting slow and you talk about the, you know, back-to-back seasons of you know, slow starts in passing defense, this is stuff that you don't necessarily love to see. You want to see them practicing, even though when you know the reasons why they're not.
Last news item, rookie cornerback Kobe Bryant was not present.
I am not panicking on this. I mean, Kobe Bryant wasn't there. He had family issues going and dealing with that, and he'll be back, you know, in the next couple days. So you know that he's going to be there participating and being active in all of this. So no panic in my mind. Do you disagree with me on the secondary
the news items
on the secondary?
No, I'm not. The only one on this list that I'm concerned about is Chris Carson, because it reminds me of the Daryl Taylor situation where it's like
his rookie year
where Pete Carroll is going to keep pushing it back because he is genuinely and earnestly optimistic about it, but also because they don't have updates. And someone texted in a good question, which is how can a team not know the situation? And usually it's because it's still myriad reasons. It's still developing. Someone's getting a second opinion because there's a separate doctor or trainer they're working with, and there's communications through multiple people, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, a Pete Carroll can reach out directly if he wants, but usually this is going through a couple channels. Or because the last time they checked in, there was no real update, and they were like,
Correct.
We'll check back in 2 weeks.
And because this is also a neck injury and a neck spinal injury that is very touchy. So this isn't something that, you know, I think is easy to determine, like a broken bone or an ACL tear or anything else that you can really truly check the have a clear understanding of where the progress is. This is a little more touchy than that. But I will say that the secondary, it is something that I get worried about because you need to have the time together.
Okay. Coming up in 20 minutes, NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal going to join us to talk about why he's a little optimistic about the Seahawks, a little more than others. Meanwhile, though, Mariners pitching has a troubling trend, but also a silver lining. So which of the two will be the reality this summer? That's next.
Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal thinks the Seahawks could be better than other people think they might be. We'll ask him about that coming up in 15 minutes. Before we get to it, though, there's a disturbing trend. And, Jake, you've got a pro tip for Mariners pitchers right now. Curious to see what a quarterback has to tell pitchers about some advice for pitching.
But yeah.
Lay it on us.
So
this is like when Stacy tells me how to do my job running
literally
the board.
And
it's like, I think it's that button. It's like, no, you don't. You don't
have
know
you
anything
this
about what's going on back here.
The best part 'Kay. Is if Curtis let me do his job for a day, mm-hmm. I would truly
you
shut
would have
down the station.
The biggest like, panic attack of all time.
Truly, I would just press all the buttons. I wouldn't know what to do. Like, everyone would be panicking.
Uh-huh.
The FCC would be involved, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, we would not be allowed to continue broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
They would be like, take down the tower. Like, it's so bad.
And I think that it is a very good comparison because, you know, look, me telling what, high-performing pitchers are to do. Like, we had our interview with Paul Sewald, and he was just making fun of how, you know, it just looks so easy. Everybody on the couch just says, hey, you know, do this, do that, right?
Yeah.
But I'm going to give you a couple stats, and this is courtesy of our good buddy Luke Arkins. And in the month of May, okay, there are six teams that are averaging 5+ runs allowed in a game. The Mariners are allowing the fourth most runs per game in May. Okay, it's Seattle, then Pitt, Colorado, and the Giants. Okay, then here's the worst part: is that the Mariners collectively have the worst home run percentage in Major League Baseball this season, which would be very accurate and would fit exactly what we have witnessed. This isn't a surprising stat. It feels like this because it is the truth. The Mariners are the worst pitching staff collectively in giving up home runs, all right, from a percentage standpoint. They are dead last at 3.6%. MLB home run percentage, the average is 2.6%. So a whole point above. And my advice is just like, maybe don't give up like a lot of home runs.
You know what? We're maybe having Scott Service on later today, Jake. Maybe, I would love to see you tell him.
Maybe
this.
Robbie Ray, like you have unbelievable outings. Curtis, could you pull up the stat that you had given to us? It was just absolutely unbelievable in terms of how good Robbie Ray has been. And then there are like it's like one inning a game where he just gets shellacked, right? Yeah. And gives up home runs and gives up runs. And that's the feeling that you have when you watch this Mariners team and watch this Mariners pitching staff. Here's Robbie Ray. This is a snapshot of collectively what this pitching staff has struggled with over the course of this month.
This is from Reddit user, I invite you to the party. All right.
My kind of guy.
My kind of guy. So he says, or they say, Robbie Ray has pitched 54 and two-thirds innings over 9 games with 31 earned runs allowed. 27 of those runs were given up in only 7 of those innings. In the other 47 and two-thirds innings pitch, he has a .76 ERA this year.
So he is an elite pitcher
outside of the
70% of the time.
Yeah.
Outside of the one inning a game, basically.
God.
Correct. It's crazy, right? Marco Gonzalez gets off to an unbelievable start. Unbelievable start. And then the wheels kind of fall off, right? It's just, you know, these are the things that I think have really snake-bitten this team. You talk about the lineup overall. They have had their struggles, no question about it. But also the pitching staff, I mean, it feels like they've been better because for the majority of the game, they pitch really well. But then there are some, you know, an inning or two where they are really, really struggling to close out a complete game. And that has been a major problem. That has been a major hurdle for this team to be able to win consistently in the month of May.
Someone texting in. Something that I've seen before, which is, well, the Mariners have faced a murderer's row of teams. Now, the May schedule is very tough, okay? But I'm going to read you right now teams that lead the league in home runs. The Angels, Mariners haven't faced them. Yankees, Astros, Mariners obviously have played them. Brewers, Diamondbacks, Braves. Phillies are in there also. So, I mean, if you're looking at, they've faced really tough lineups. For instance, Boston's lineup. We said this a million times, that their record makes no sense given all the talent that they have.
Right.
So it hasn't been easy. I don't know if they've been the recipient of rotten luck. I don't know if it's a mix of a really tough schedule. To this texter's point, I think it's like half true, which is they have faced some of those teams, but I don't know that that's the only thing.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's the one thing that you could say, oh, well, don't worry about it. Those stats, don't worry about it because you know, they face really good teams. Well, sorry, you're going to continue to keep doing that. And you need this rotation to avoid those innings that you run into where it just, they can't get out of it. And that is the one thing that I'm going to be keeping a close eye on as you progress over the next couple series here. Can this pitching staff settle down? Can they pitch clean, complete games? And that is going to be a key differentiating factor for them to be able to sweep in this series, for them to be able to take care of the Orioles, for them to be able to handle their business against the Texans, right? And to be able to compete with a team like the Houston Astros. You're going to need that element.
I think one thing that's interesting to note about this series, too, is it's a nice time to test your theory. Obviously, it's impossible to test anything in one series, but Oakland has the second fewest home runs of any team and the worst OPS of any team. So if there ever was a series in which you try to buck that trend and not give up too many home runs, this would be the one because this team has really struggled to actually succeed with the long ball.
It would be. However, last night...
Well, right.
Chad Bender hit one to
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's, you know what? Like, it's a new day. It is a new day. So what I'm saying is, you know, game two, game three, let's see if you can get it
Jake,
done.
Jake, you're throwing all these numbers at me, and like, yes. All I'm hearing is...
You can stat that.
That's what I'm hearing.
Yes, stat that. Stat that. We're bringing stat that back, okay?
It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. All right, Greg Rosenthal thinks that the Seahawks could be better than critics expect, but what needs to go right? That's next.